keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope, so no overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd no, we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for
hey,
dreams.
Everybody, welcome back to the Anti Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Make sure you guys check out UCY and bookmark the UCY website and check out all the other hosts. We're not the only ones, there's a bunch of other awesome radio hosts and personalities and journalists. Alternative voices that you're going to get to hear from all over the political spectrum, all over the country, all over the world, and just make sure you check it out. Support independent media, and make sure you guys check out our website, theantimedia.org. We're working really hard to bring you guys all the breaking anti-establishment news and perspectives and breaking news and kind of pointing out the flaws in the empire and the police state and all the protests going on. And you know, we're really a voice for the underclass. That's the way I like to see it, and that's what we're trying to do, and we're really working hard to build this thing into a major operation that sooner or later is going to put the nail in the coffin of the corporate media. That's the goal. That's what I had envisioned when I started this whole thing up, and that's what we're trying to do. I'm also joined by my co-host in the studio tonight, DB Schwartz. How you doing, man?
Doing well. Just watching with, you know, unfolding. It's just kind of crazy what's going on. We're starting to see things like we've literally been doing this show for 2 years, and a lot of the things we started talking about 2 years ago are coming to fruition despite our best efforts. Now, that doesn't mean that what we're doing and what alternative media is doing isn't important. It's vitally, vitally important, because at least if you get this generation to not trust the corporate media and not trust the government, you know their children won't at all, and then we can start to change things. I guess that's what we're really hoping for, right?
Yeah, more or less. I mean, that's what we got to do to make the change, I guess you could say. We got to first undermine the status quo. And then the big thing that's important, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later on tonight with Morgan Rockwell from Bitcoin Kinetics and BitCongress. I know a lot of you guys are excited to hear about that, is bringing about solutions. How do we fix the problems? How do we stop the corruption? How do we bring back a voice politically to people that are typically underrepresented, like minorities, poor people, the masses in general? Even the middle class isn't represented anymore like they used to be.
Right.
So we got to talk about undermining the status quo while at the same time providing solutions that are more justice-based, that would help a larger amount of people and undermine the oligarchy. Now, we got to cover some quick news here before we're going to bring on some special guests tonight. We have someone calling in from Ferguson in a few minutes, so we want to cover some of this stuff before we jump into that. We may not have time, and we'll cover the rest of the news after we have our callers tonight. First on the list here, China basically surpasses U.S. economic power, which is under the purchasing power parity, which what was that again?
Basically, it boils down to China at this point's the economic and definitely the production powerhouse in the world, but they're not saddled with unfunded liabilities like the United States is. and thus they're able to buy more things that they need. So in effect, the government itself has more purchasing power on the world market than the U.S. government does. And surprise, surprise, now things are starting to fall apart, right?
Yeah, man. And you know, people have been talking about this for a while, that we were going to lose our number one status economically. And it came about a lot quicker than people thought, because I think people didn't understand exactly how bad our monetary system is. And that's really the underwriting factor here that's undermining our economic prowess. And it's what's decimating the middle class, and it's what's making the working class even poorer, is the Federal Reserve and the banking system and the fiat system and all that stuff. I mean, this is what's really hurting our purchasing power and our economic power, not only here domestically, but around the world, you know? Right. And if you look at the BRICS nations, people are slowly but surely turning away from the dollar.
Yep. They're going to the gold standard. You know, I know that Russia wants to do a gold-backed ruble, and they don't need to. They can back their currency with natural resources. They have $75 trillion in untapped natural resources. That's number one in the world. We're number two with 45. We're far behind them, but we're far ahead of almost everybody else. I think China is like $20 trillion, so we're really up there. And we've got to understand that we're being robbed, okay? It's just that simple. We're being robbed. In Russia, they know they're being robbed. The mafia runs the government. Here, they still pretend that you have a choice and a voice and you can affect change. You can, but you got to start now spreading it out, because guess what? Our currency is worthless. Me and you, what we have in our banks, not worth anything if tomorrow something happened.
Yeah, and we got to be more radical with our voices. And we're also joined tonight by our special co-host, SM Gibson, calling in from in the South. How you doing, man?
Doing good, man. How you doing?
Pretty good. We miss having you in studio, but we're glad you're back on the air with us.
Yeah, excited. Been moving around the country a little bit, but I'm glad to be back.
We're going to have some awesome callers tonight. One guy from Ferguson, another guy from BitCongress, which is an awesome idea. That's basically a voting system that's nearly incorruptible, that's based on Bitcoin, and he's going to call in about 10 minutes or so. We want to cover this news real quick, though, before we get our callers in. And then we're going to take some callers later on in the show from the audience as well, if you guys want to talk about BitCongress. And then if not, after that, we can take some calls on all this other news stuff. So the other news quickly here, we can talk about this later in more in depth, but Ebola obviously is in the headlines. We've got an article on the anti-media about how only one in five U.S. hospitals are ready to treat Ebola patients and to contain an Ebola outbreak. So we're not really prepared. And there was another point that you wanted to make, DB, about our hospital beds and stuff.
Right. You know, doing some research about how Ebola is pretty much primed to become pandemic, not so much because we don't have the ability to curtail our borders, they're being opened, and not so much that we don't have a cure, because, you know, we do, we own the patents. The biggest problem I see is we have 3 hospital beds for every 1,000 Americans, and that's just not going to cut it, provided anything happened. What if Yellowstone popped up? What if anything happened where there were a lot of people that needed help? We don't have the facilities, and that to me is inexcusable. Where the heck is all these billions of dollars in the medical industry going?
Yeah, man.
I mean, do you think this whole Ebola thing is going to be used basically to usher in martial law?
I mean, honestly, it could be, but I think it's kind of played out and people know to look for that now. But of course, they have all those coffins. So if something really just started getting crazy, what could we do?
Yeah, I'm still really undecided on this Ebola stuff. I do have a bio background and I know a little bit about it. I don't know enough about it. I do know that I'm pretty sure it's one of two things. Either A, it's being overhyped and used as a scaremongering tactic in order to distract us from the reality of what's going on with ISIS and Iraq and Syria. And I think that could be a possibility. I think the other possibility is that the government is massively downplaying it and acting like it's not really that big of a deal and it's not that big of a threat and that it's really hard to catch this stuff. Well, you know, I tend to lean towards the fact that it could be downplayed just because of the way people are catching this stuff. I mean, the woman in Spain that caught it, the doctor that has Ebola in Spain, I mean, she says she followed all the precautions. She was wearing all the protective equipment. She was wearing the facial equipment. The second person that just caught it in the U.S. that was helping to treat the other guy that caught it that came over from West Africa, they were following most of the safety precautions as well. So I think that this thing could be much more contagious than they're saying. I don't want to say it's completely airborne, but that I think is definitely a possibility.
I believe it's also gotten to a point where it's mutated to be able to survive a long time in an airborne environment. The reason I say that is because somebody was wearing full protective gear, one of the initial responders, and they still managed to come down with symptoms despite a full hazmat suit on. So what did it do? It got on their suit and they took it home? I mean, how does this stuff spread?
Yeah, that's a good question. And we'll get into that a little bit more towards the end of the show here. But we're joined now by Jason Basler of the Free Thought Project. And he was out in St. Louis this weekend and in Ferguson for Ferguson October. And we brought... How's it going, Jason? How you doing?
Good, guys. How you doing?
Pretty good. Hey, we want to know if you can give us an update about what's going on in Ferguson, what's going on in St. Louis. I know you were part of all the protests. You got pepper sprayed by the cops, and you were live streaming for us on the anti-media. Can you tell us a little bit about what went on this weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know exactly where to start. Each night has been a bit different. The beginning of the week when I got here on Thursday was certainly the most intense standoff. It was the day after Von Derrick Myers had been shot. In the Shaw area. So that area specifically has been the most energetic. But ever since then, every night has been something a little bit different. We just got to the third Walmart action of the night that has been planned. And we're here for literally 5 minutes. And there was probably, I'd say, maybe about 100 protesters out here. But it seems like the strategy is to try to maybe waste resources as much as possible and move around from each Walmart. As soon as we got to the Walmart earlier, this is the second one we've been to, it was immediately pretty intense. The protesters didn't take very long to engage the police, and once police started kind of moving forward, a lot of the protesters backed off, but some of them started to sit down and were pretty violently arrested. They were sitting on the ground. One got thrown down very hard. So it's been a whirlwind. We're off to our next action right now. But I guess there was over 20 planned today. So yeah, I don't know where I should even start, but it's been a wild ride so far.
So I know you and me, you run the freethoughtproject.com, which I'm sure you guys have read. They're posted on CopBlock many times, Police the Police, Facebook pages. Now, you and me, we write about the police state all the time, but many times from a distance and not having to experience it firsthand. I wanted to know what it's like for you to be there and experience the police state firsthand and experience freedom of speech being undermined.
Right, yeah. You know, I guess after covering this for as long as we have been, it's nothing too shocking. And unfortunately, it's kind of sad to say, but it has firsthand been a little bit intense. Like I said, especially the first night, basically the police came in and kind of corralled us very quickly. And at that point, they just started indiscriminately spraying the protesters, the NLG illegal observers, the journalists, and it was, from what we've heard, pepper spray that's 10 times more potent than the Bear pepper spray that they use. So it certainly messed me up pretty bad, and my colleague, who is also here with me, Cassandra Rules, she unfortunately caught it right in the eyes. I got it more in the face, like in the neck area, but yeah, I mean, it certainly is a reminder that the police here do not respect the First Amendment. They have no respect for journalists and or legal observers whatsoever. So it's nothing that I wasn't expecting, I suppose. But at the same time, it's certainly a reminder of the police state.
Von Derrick, what's up? This is DB, man. I was just wondering if anybody there, were you able to talk to anybody? Does anybody know about Von Derrick, and can anybody kind of attest to his character, because you know they're trying to assassinate both him and Michael Brown now?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Well, I mean, I didn't talk to any of his friends or family firsthand, but the very first night that Cassandra was here, she did talk to the shop owner, who also verifies that it obviously is hard to tell, but he was claiming that he was unarmed, that it was almost physically impossible for him to be armed because he was wearing his pants very low, and it's one of those things that you'd probably see a piece, you know. And the store manager also claimed that he had just bought a sandwich, which has been reported by some of the witnesses that he just had a sandwich in his hand. So it's been very confusing, obviously, this misinformation, and the police never tell the truth, as we know. So it's pretty messy, but regardless, I feel like the community has just reached this boiling point with a lot of the police violence, and it's just it's to the point now where even non-activists, you could just tell there's people here from the community who have never done this before, but they've gotten to the point where they're just tired of it. And it's very apparent. It's very obvious. And it's people of all different colors, you know, different creeds, all different types of ethnicities. They're just all tired of the police. So.
Yeah. And you know, there was a guy here in San Diego, not too long ago, a couple of years back, that actually got gunned down by the police literally because he had a sandwich. So, the whole thing where people are saying, yeah, well, he got gunned down and all he was carrying was a sandwich, that sounds kind of, to the average viewer or the average reader, that might sound like far-fetched, but it's happened here in San Diego, and I've seen it. It happened very close to where I was living at the time. So, I mean, these kind of things actually happen, and unarmed people get killed by the police on a daily basis. I mean, we write about this stuff all the time. So the final question I had for you is, how do we get justice? How do we fix this thing? Do you have any ideas? What are people talking about on the ground out there? What do we do to take our streets back from these police state agents?
Right. Well, great question. You know, in this point of time, I don't believe that, unfortunately, people are understanding of the full picture, I guess, basically. So they're kind of taking baby steps here and there. We were talking with one gentleman at yesterday's protest who was from Minneapolis Cop Watch, I believe, and they've actually started, I can't even remember if it was, I don't think it was a petition, but it's a petition, but they're basically trying to get liability for police, individual liability. So it's obviously, you guys know, at this point in time, when police do anything that violates people's rights, they do any kind of violent acts, most of the time the taxpayers end up footing the bill. So what we're proposing, what they're proposing, and I feel like it's a great idea, is to actually make sure that each individual officer has their own liability insurance, so that way they're personally held accountable in their own pocketbook, which obviously would change things quite considerably, because if they're being held accountable by their own, like I said, pocketbook, then, you know, things would change. They wouldn't be acting so violent. They wouldn't be acting so, you know, quick to pull the trigger. And so that's one solution. It seems like also they're just, you know, trying to put a lot of pressure on the fact that they want some justice here. And, you know, it doesn't really relate to your question, but I feel like it's the main theme here, you know, it's one way or another, they want to see some kind of justice for the killing of Mike Brown. And I have a feeling, unfortunately, that Darren Wilson is not going to be indicted. And I think everybody kind of knows that. And so I guess that's where it's at right now. But that somewhat answer your question?
Yeah, man. That's a good answer.
Yeah, and I was just, Jason, just to give you a little heads up, I was reading up on what you just told us about, and that's actually coming up on November 4th, so in a little over 20 days, City of Minneapolis Police Brutality Personal Insurance Charter Amendment, because they've had to pay out $20 million over the last 7 years for police brutality. They want to require them to cover themselves, and they should.
Yeah, and here in San Diego, actually, we at all the protests that we organize out here, because, you know, we're a big part of a lot of the protests out here, we actually have a plainclothes officer that comes to every single one of our protests. And in fact, I think he's starting to like us, and he's starting to kind of like our ideas and stuff. He even brought his kid to one of the protests not too long ago. But they've attached him to our protests in order to keep all the other cops away, because Same thing happened here in San Diego, especially during the Occupy movement a couple years ago. A bunch of lawsuits got brought against the city, brought against the cops, and the city had to pay out a bunch of money. And so strictly out of a financial standpoint, and I think a financial incentive is one of the strongest incentives out there, to keep these guys accountable, I think is a good way, financially is a good way to keep some transparency and to keep these guys in check.
I mean, why do commercial drivers have auto insurance? It's literally the same thing. So we got to make these guys cover themselves and then be held personally accountable.
Hey, absolutely.
One more.
And that seems like the political solution as far as I'm concerned. You know, obviously it's going to be an evolution of, you know, the mind and people's understanding of exactly what's going on. But for right now, I feel like this is the best political solution for us. So if we can't apply pressure to do, you know, the individual liability, then I feel like that is the best solution right now.
Awesome, Jason. Before we let you go, how long are you going to be out there for?
I leave tomorrow. I've been here since Thursday, so it's been a long haul. I've been going to sleep about 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning every day, just trying to cover this. Most of the actions happen at night, so it's been a long haul.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you for calling in, and we appreciate your work. And we'll talk to you. We'll talk to you sometime soon.
Stay safe.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
So yeah, that was Jason Basler from the freethoughtproject.com. They're actually one of the top 500 websites in the world now, which is amazing. And you'll see his work on our Facebook page, the Anti-Media, Cop Block, Police the Police, on all those Facebook pages. Make sure you check all that stuff out because they're doing some amazing work over there. And I think he made a... These guys from, I think they said Minneapolis, are making a pretty good point there, because I think that holding these guys personally, financially liable is one easy way to at least get them to be not so damn trigger happy if they're forced to pay out of their own pockets if they're found doing wrong. Now, one thing that Jason brought up about Darren Wilson, which is the cop that shot Mike Brown, which, as we all know, is being talked about in the grand jury, I think it's called. Chances are that this guy is going to be let off the hook. I mean, that's probably what's going to happen. And there was some information that got put out there by a journalist. I think it was from Daily Kos, where basically... a journalist had talked to a anonymous source that said that the military is getting ready, more or less, for martial law down in St. Louis and Ferguson. And the only reason I can see that happening is because they already pretty much know that Darren Wilson is going to get let off the hook. And just like in L.A. when they had the Rodney King riots, it was when Rodney King... The cops that beat up Rodney King got let off the hook, and that's what ignited all these riots. And now that is very possibly the same scenario that will play out in St. Louis and will play out in Ferguson if this Darren Wilson character gets let off the hook. Now, we don't know. We're not the grand jury. We don't see the evidence. We don't know if that guy is at fault. We don't know what happened. But based on the community anger, The real problem here isn't just with Mike Brown. It's that these cops have been abusing these people in this community for a very, very long time.
Right. It built up. I mean, this is not the first guy. He's not going to be the last, unfortunately, until we clean up our policy. You know, what Jason brought up, man, to me, you're going to couple that with disarmament of lethal weapons for non-SWAT. You're going to couple that with personal video recording devices that would make anything not caught on tape inadmissible in court. Word as a police officer, why should that hold any more merit than anyone else? In fact, it's been proven that they vet lower quality individuals into the departments. It's not like it used to be. It used to be we want the best, now we want the dumbest. And that's proven.
Proven. Yeah. There was a court, a case that went to the courts. There was a case that went to the courts that basically showed that they hire. Hey, the caller that just got added, can you please mute your radio? 619, how's it going? You're on the Anti-Media Radio. What do you want to talk about?
I'm actually calling in to talk about that big Congress. I read that PDF.
Oh yeah. The you read the white paper on it. Morgan's gonna call in a few minutes. So if you want to stick around, just if you want to mute up for a while, we're gonna do an introduction. He's gonna talk about it. Then we'll start taking some questions from him. And you'll have the first shot at asking him a question once he gets on. He'll be on in a few minutes here.
Fantastic. Do I just stay on the line?
Yeah, you could just stay on the line and mute your phone, and you can unmute it once you're ready to ask a question.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. So, I mean, I think you brought up a good point, DB, about disarming, not disarming completely,
no,
but just taking the lethal weapons out of the hands of these cops.
They still kill with tasers.
They've still killed people with tasers. They killed a mentally handicapped man with the taser.
Right.
Kelly Thomas. He killed? He was tased like 9 times and they killed him, gave him a heart attack. But there's no reason for the average, everyday, quote-unquote, peace officer to be armed with a lethal weapon. As long as we have these high-tech tasers that can fire a distance, you know, you don't have to be right hand-to-hand and tase a guy now. They have these taser guns. You could tase them from 20, 30 feet away. Cool. And if there's a guy with the gun that's causing a big-time dangerous situation, then call in the SWAT. That's what you're supposed to do anyways. So we need to disarm these cops. I remember in Mexico a couple years back, the cops were so damn corrupt that they took all their guns and gave them slingshots.
Right.
That was one of the funniest things I've ever seen, and that's a true story. But yeah, they actually do this stuff.
They just disarmed the entire police department in Aguala, which is a border town, because they found the shallow open graves of 43 students. So the entire police department's disarmed because I'm sure they murdered them. You have to understand, when corruption is it's so indoctrinated in a culture, like it is with us at the highest levels of power, the only way to take it back is to take away their ability to kill you so you don't need to listen to them. Would police have the same fear without their gun? Would they be able to get away with the same stuff without their gun? The answer is no.
Yeah, man. I mean, there's so many things that we need to do. The financial thing is good. The disarming these guys is good. I think we had Derek Brose on the program a while back to talk about alternatives to traditional policing, and I think that's also a great solution. I mean, set up your own community policing networks and set up some kind of app or something that alerts, you know, when there's a domestic violence situation going down. You have a community person that's been elected by the people in your neighborhood that can show up and de-escalate the situation, keep it safe. You know, keep the violence away.
They're going to do a better job than the police department. The police department average response time is what, 8-9 minutes? You're done. If there's any emergency, you're gone already. All they're doing is picking up the pieces and making people feel good that there's going to be some sort of responsibility taken by the perpetrator of the crime. And that's just not the case, nor is rehabilitation going to work. So what can we do? Prevention, right? Prevention. We have to have people that have patrols going around if we need to, and we can use drones. We don't need a bunch of people with pitchforks and torches looking for rapists and murderers. We got technology. It's being used right now to control us, but we should use the technology to protect ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the technology is definitely a double-edged sword. We can sit back and be complacent and let it get used against us, or we can be assertive with it and use it for our own protection, our own benefit. And that's what we got to do, because it's definitely going to be used against us either way.
Right now it is, so.
Yeah. So let's
cover. Nick, I'm just sitting here reading, and I'm watching Paul and Jason and Cassandra on Twitter right now. And apparently they're at a QT, and the cops are showing up. They've already arrested, apparently today, 76 people. Now, do you believe 76 people have actually broken the law today for them to arrest 76 people?
I mean, that's insane. I mean, that's police statism, right? I mean, all these people are doing is flexing their First Amendment. Yeah, so they're at a QT, they're at a Walmart, and we all know that the cops are out there protecting the Walmart. I remember, you know, I had a huge realization one time when we had a End the Fed rally here in San Diego, and we don't have a Federal Reserve branch here in San Diego or in Southern California. There is a auxiliary office in Los Angeles, but the main Fed branch on the West Coast is up in San Fran. And anyway, we had a End the Fed rally, and the closest thing we had to a Fed down here in San Diego was a bunch of big banks, Chase Bank, Bank of America. Right. And we started out at the federal building. We marched over to the bank. We marched over to Chase Bank, right? And we're out on the sidewalk. And keep in mind, we're on the sidewalk. We're not even on the property of the bank. But the cops literally lined up on the bank property and formed basically a human chain. And keep in mind, we had about eight like skinny young dudes in their 20s that were out there protesting. We were like no threat at all. And we had a few occupiers with us that were chalking up the sidewalks, writing messages about the banks and about the Fed and stuff. And the cops they formed a human chain and they were protecting the banks mm-hmm. against us. I mean, that's what these guys are. And if you look at the definitions, the role of a police officer in corporate America is to protect property. It is not to protect us. And their original role was to uphold our rights, right. to make sure our rights were being protected. And now, unfortunately, the police have become the agents of the corporate state, and they are one of the biggest oppressors of our rights, the biggest ones that abuse our rights.
It's just to protect and serve the people is now to protect and serve the corporations that run it all. And that's it. They don't get paid without them. And it's just that simple. They're not going to bite the hand that feeds them. But what they don't get, what a lot of these agents of the state don't get, the people feed you. We make your water clean. We make your food and your entertainment and educate your stupid fucking children. That's what pisses me off. There's no us without we. It's not you and all the sheeps that you're a shepherd over against the wolves. That is not your job.
Yeah, man. There's that saying where the people are the sheep and the cops are the sheepdog that protect the sheep from the wolves.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's turned into where now, yeah, they are the dogs, but they're the dogs of the
sheep
wolves.
Into the wolves.
They're the dogs of the wolves. They're like the underclass of the wolves. The wolves tell them what to do, and then they herd us all into the slaughterhouse. And that I think is what basically is going on. These guys are shutting down Walmarts. They're shutting down QT, which I think a QT is basically like a 7-Eleven, like a convenience store or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a convenience store gas station.
Yeah, and they're shutting those down. These guys, these cops are coming in. Oh, well, we got to keep them in business. We're going to go ahead and arrest all you guys, you know. So I think this is it's really a sign of the times. And like I said, I had that realization a while back when these guys were protecting the banks against eight skinny kids that were in their 20s that were absolutely no threat. And I called them out on it. I called those cops out on it. I'm like, dude, you guys are supposed to be out here protecting us. You're supposed to be protecting our rights. What the hell are you doing standing on bank property protecting that bank against us? That bank stole a bunch of money from us. That bank put a bunch of our family members into foreclosure. That bank put a bunch of people in the bankruptcy.
That bank just bankrupted your pension.
Yeah.
But you don't know it yet because you haven't collected on it.
You don't know it yet because they're watching TV, dude. You know what I mean?
We're at that point, man.
There are some good cops in there, and I know that. In fact, one of our journalists met a cop in a coffee shop the other day up in Seattle, and the cop was like saying that we need to protest the police because we need to enact these reforms, and that the people, the protesters, are the check and balance because the government no longer check and balances itself.
Why should they?
When the founders set up this country, they were under this utopian idea that, oh, yeah, the government's going to be a check and balance under itself. That's why we need three branches of government. Unfortunately, all three branches of government have been co-opted by money, you know, and they no longer represent us.
Well, the roots have cancer, and that cancer is Zionism. That cancer is impending mass genocide and all kinds of bad things going on. So we've got to hack at the root, man. It doesn't matter the branches, three branches of what government. Government is by the people, for the people. That's gone.
Well, here's a problem, too, and this ties into everything we've really talked about. Let's say, for instance, you know, the Ebola crisis is real. Well, guess what? We're not going to have the money to help anybody because if it is a real crisis, because we had a state crisis in 2008 and we bailed all the banks out and we gave all the money away. Yep. So it's just this big scam. And so if there is anything, we don't have any money for it anyway because we've just given it all away back to the criminals.
Yeah, and you know, this is actually kind of a good segue to break into this thing with Morgan. He's going to call in a few minutes. Sorry for the caller. You got to wait a little bit, but be patient, please. He'll be calling in a few minutes. But Bitcoin, I think, is a good at least a one piece of the puzzle that we can use to break up this whole petrodollar system, the whole Federal Reserve system, the whole central banking system.
The whole power structure of the elite.
Yeah, man. I mean, so what we got to do is – you know, Bitcoin is one part of it. Barter economy is another part of it. Craigslist is another part of it. And there's other ideas that are going to be coming up in the future that are going to be a big part of it. Trading, going back to gold and silver, going to a cannabis-based currency, commodity-based trades, and skill shares, labor swaps. I mean, you know, the perfect transaction, because anytime you use dollars to make a transaction, the government is always the middleman. You're always paying taxes. You're losing your money to inflation. But the perfect trade in the perfect world is like a labor trade, where you say, hey, buddy, I know how to plant gardens, and I can build you a raised bed, plant your garden, and exchange, you fix my radiator in my car.
Yep.
That is a perfect trade, because there is no middleman in between. You're not losing any value.
Yep.
You know, and you don't got to go to the government and get a dollar and then give that dollar over to your buddy and then get taxed on it, whether directly or through inflation. You can just trade directly.
Yep.
Now, there was a really cool thing that came out, I think, 2 years ago when the Greek financial crisis was going on. We all know what happened in Greece.
Mm-hmm.
Goldman Sachs basically owns all of Greece's infrastructure now, because they did the bailouts and they leveraged all the infrastructure of Greece, all the public land, all the public utilities, all the infrastructure was basically leveraged on this bailout, and their economy has gone into disarray. It's still in shreds right now. But what happened in Greece is, these guys, out of necessity, they created a website kind of like Craigslist, where they did exactly what we're talking about now, where they were basically trading their labor.
Right.
And so, like, you can go and you could say, okay, well, I'm going to teach a class for these kids to teach them math, and all of their parents are going to pay me 5 minutes worth of or 30 minutes worth of labor or whatever,
right.
And then I can take all that saved up labor from teaching all these kids, and then I can use that to pay a guy to change my oil in my car,
right,
or whatever.
That's the dream. I mean, the dream is simple. If Bitcoin killed the dollar and killed the yuan and killed the ruble, right, then what's going to be left? They're going to have to basically say, you know what, everything we've been doing this whole time has been a big bunch of bullshit, because all our power is derived from you believing this had value and now it doesn't. Now what'll that do? People are going to have to group together on a community level and feed and clothe and have water and take care of themselves, right? But then we're going to get back to that, Nick. We are going to get back to interpersonal relationships. And I think that's the whole automation dream. Me and you wake up in the morning. We do what we have a passion for that actually makes the wheels of this world turn, not just be some cog in it, but actually be a mover and a shaker because you're passionate about something. Food, clothing, shelter, all that kind of stuff. It's free, man. Let's not fake it. It's free. The only thing that's not free right now, what can a person do for you? Because machines run for free.
Hey, so we got Morgan Rockwell on the line now from Bitcoin Kinetics and BitCongress. How you doing, man?
What's going on, Nick?
Oh, nothing much. Just talking about how the Federal Reserve is basically destroying the economy and all kinds of other awful things that the monetary system is doing. So, we wanted to bring you on here because you got this awesome idea coming out that you've been developing for a while. And I remember when you were living down here in San Diego, I went over to your office and I got to see this, a lot of this stuff in action, and it blew my mind. And I've been thinking about it ever since. I'm really interested in BitCongress because I think it's a way that we can really change the representation system. Our democracy, we could actually empower people to have a voice again. Because right now, I don't know if you saw that study that came out of Stanford, but literally they've declared the U.S. an oligarchy because the people that we supposedly vote for do not represent us. They represent large corporate interests, and it's been proven. You have this awesome idea called BitCongress that can revolutionize the way that we vote and revolutionize government around the world. I wanted to bring you on here so you could talk a little bit about that. What can you tell us?
Okay. Well, first I'd like to say that I completely understand the strong words of oligarchy, because there's a lot of strong words we use in regards to, like, our money and our government, and that's kind of why I created BitCongress, is to be very, I would say, detailed in regards to what words we use for both the rules that we have to follow and what we call money and value. Like, we were raised on the concept of the dollar, and the word the dollar is a dollar because it's called the dollar. But, you know, we have the Federal Reserve note is really what our dollar is, and people don't really understand that because they changed the word. And it used to be a gold note, and that changed from the word note to dollar. And it's like Platoism. Words are very important. Otherwise, you're not living in a box. You're living in a cube, you know. And I think with BitCongress, my idea is to be able to choose what word, what sentence, what paragraph you want to implement as so-called law, legislation, or a contract, or rules, and apply them to a network that no one else could change again, and see if the rest of society on an individual basis would like to choose your rules and your set of words over other people's set of rules and words. And it would allow both a learning environment to learn about legislative processes, about creating, debating, and pretty much corrupting and negotiating people to make your laws work over other people's laws, and understand that process that we never see. The whole house of cards is very, you know, shaded. We don't see inside the house unless you're in the house. And my goal is to make the house of cards a glass house so that everyone could see every vote. But no one really knows who's voting because we have this beautiful blockchain anonymous currency, Bitcoin, and the blockchain allows pretty much anyone who owns a password to own an address, which is property. So I've pretty much tried to take the words of property, ownership, and a person and tried to blend them a little bit and make a Bitcoin address a person and allow a Bitcoin address to receive only one vote in its entire life. And that vote can be used in the BitCongress system to vote on a piece of legislation or for a candidate in an election. And when that election's done, the vote token is sent back to the voter. So it allows within a timed moment you to use this token as a hand to the person you want to win. And when the election's over, it gets handed back. And it allows that token to be a one token use per law, say, per vote. And it allows a Bitcoin address to pretty much become a person, and a Bitcoin address now has the right to vote. And you register a Bitcoin address, and it can vote. And my purpose for doing this is because we're in a world where everyone wants to put their identification on everything, and we're in a world where we have one agency spying on every human on Earth, and there's no reason to battle agencies like that. And there's no reason to compete with the word government, because it's just a word and it's really just a collection of rules on paper. But now it could be a collection of rules on the blockchain. And the word government's pretty dirty because there's a lot of people using it improperly. And it would be a more useful, sexy, cool, hip word to the youth if it was, you know, as entertaining as Angry Birds or Facebook. And it was something that we just do on the daily. We just legislate on the daily. We just vote on the daily. And if you want to be an activist for 10 minutes, you can write an amazing law, post it on BitCongress, and go back and doing your day job. And maybe it changes the world. Maybe everyone votes on it. And that allows access to the legislative process without depending on it for your career, like most politicians do. And just the whole point that I want to see what a politician's doing. If I call him and tell him to vote, I want to make sure that everyone knows I told him to vote that way. And, you know, a man that's holding house may ignore 40,000 constituents and vote a different way, but no one knows what they all told him. And with BitCongress, even a congressman could use the system right now, and all of his constituency can make the decisions publicly held on the blockchain to that representative, so that if that representative votes a different way, everyone knows he's not listening to his constituency, and the proper action could be taken on the old world Congress. And the new world BitCongress will eventually, hopefully, be brought to the old world Congress, and their yay and nay punch card machines will be replaced with blockchain systems that are connected to the internet. And that would be the hope, so that we could essentially have a real electronic voting system that every single human being on Earth can audit every minute. And effectively, you wouldn't really need people there once the system is fully in place and used by everyone. You wouldn't need a representative. You may just need a screen showing everyone's vote. And you may need a person saying that's the law now, you know? And it doesn't necessarily mean that we can have 500 people or electors for the Electoral College that no one really ever sees on TV or on C-SPAN. You don't see the people, the delegates, and you don't see the financiers and the PACs and everyone funding these laws or funding these politicians. But with BitCongress, it allows all these financial transactions with both the voting and the legislative process to be on a blockchain. And they're not all on the same blockchain. I use three different blockchains to somewhat represent the three separate branches of our functioning government, and try to improve the system where we have Bitcoin's blockchain as the underlying infrastructure used for monetary budgeting, funding, those kind of things. Counterparty, which is built on top of Bitcoin as a token system that allows you to create financial tools on Bitcoin. And Ethereum, which is a smart contract network, which is how BitCongress creates elections. And within an election, you can create a piece of legislation, or you can list a bunch of candidates. And the smart contract is going to allow a yay or nay address to automatically be made per piece of legislation, and an automated address to be made per candidate. And when you post your group of friends you want to run for your little project at school, you could use BitCongress. If the Senate gets its head out of its ass, it could use BitCongress. If American Idol wanted to use BitCongress, it could use BitCongress to allow all of the voters to vote at home with their phones, and everyone will see exactly how many votes that artist got, so there'll be no funny business, and all the award shows will actually have real polls, and every magazine you see could have real polls that could be audited with a QR code on the internet, and anything that you vote on Earth can be now voted on using a blockchain system. And the best part is that these three systems all have three different pools of miners, three different pools of nodes: the Ethereum nodes, the counterparty nodes, the Bitcoin nodes. And each part does a different part, which is in whole a Congress. Those parts have their own individual groups around the world mining in a decentralized manner. So it's three decentralized networks meshed together. In, I wouldn't call it a decentralized way anymore. It's more of a mesh network, because there's going to be fail safes. If, a smart contract network like Ethereum that got huge millions of dollars in funding recently, just say it went away tomorrow, the smart contract blockchain idea is an open source system that can be copied and cloned in a few minutes. So in my creating this product, I've tried to use what is here, such as platforms like Ethereum, token systems like Counterparty, instead of creating a centralized full package system like a company or a product usually would be done. I'm trying to build this system on platforms and suites that are running on open source software already out there, with miners already running those infrastructures. There's already value given to the Ethereum network and value given to the Bitcoin network. And Counterparty is about to be the replacement for the stock exchange. So it's going to be three very powerful blockchains coupled together with a very simple application that's just an HTML5 app, coupling them all together. And that application is called Axiomity. And in the dictionary, axiom means to rule. So I made this app like the ruling event in your hand, and you will be able to pretty much control Ether tokens, Bitcoins, vote tokens, any type of currency like Congress or a tender that would be created to fund laws within the BitCongress system, any type of asset that you would want to make. Say your school was voting for a class president, and you would want to make a elementary school coin, and everyone that participated in that election got an elementary school coin, and they got like a free lunch if they turned in that coin. Like it's a participatory system that allows rewards. It allows, if you want to legislate for 10 minutes and write a law, and by chance, you know, a million people vote on that law, it ranks itself up into a viewer of the top ranked laws. And maybe there's a reward, a token of tender given to the legislator. And now you can legislate for 15 minutes. You can get paid for it and go back to doing whatever you do and go skate down the block in Chula Vista and just change the world. But you didn't give up your career to be a politician, you know?
Yeah, man. It sounds completely like revolutionizing. Now, I really like the idea how anybody can kind of give their 2 cents on legislating. I mean, that's completely different than what we have right now, where basically these quote unquote lawmakers basically write legislation and pass legislation, and really we don't have a say on it. These guys in Congress and Senate, and then the president is able to sign it or veto it. These guys have all the power right now when it comes to writing laws, when it comes to the NDAA, which allowed for indefinite detention without trial, when it comes to declaring war and all that stuff. I mean, these bureaucrats have all the power, and I think that this BitCongress idea can really change that, because then it'll be crowdsourced, more or less. Legislation that's crowdsourced, you know, and that's what I really like about it. Now,
my important view was to make sure people learn how to legislate, because before you can understand how people behind closed doors are legislating your ass into the ground, you must learn how to legislate yourself. And we already are learning how to be bankers and financiers because we have Bitcoin, and little kids are trading at home on their computers. So now we need to learn how to be politicians, if not for the political reasons, but for the legislative reason. To learn how to write law properly is a very important skill, I think, that all humans should know, just like they should learn binary. You should learn binary and should learn how to write law in both English and French and German and Spanish, because eventually there'll be robots that you'll have to write laws for too. And binary is going to be right there next to the English word. So this is my hope, to bridge the gap between man and machines and man laws and machine laws, because now we could write law in C++ and a machine could understand it. So when the law is passed, the door can unlock and the guns are behind the door. And unless we vote for that law, the tanks don't turn on because the ignitions are connected to a bit switch. And the world of automation is coming, and we need to have a legislative process for the robots, and for when your robots ask for their rights, well, they need a system that they can vote on, and they will talk to BitCongress before they talk to the House and the Senate in Washington, D.C.
Hey, man, now we're going to take some calls. We're going to take some questions from some callers in a few minutes here. I have 2 questions I want to ask you, and if you could answer them, we only have about 8 minutes left, so if you could answer them
pretty
quick.
I'll be quick.
One, the biggest detraction is people saying, okay, well, this system can be hacked and it can be corrupted. That's my first question. How do we prevent that? My second question is, how do we keep it transparent?
Well, the first thing that got me into Bitcoin is because you have a blockchain explorer and you could see every Bitcoin transaction every second live. And in that same manner, you're going to see every vote live on the counterparty transaction on their blockchain. And every time someone creates an election, you're going to see an election created. It's going to be timestamped. You're going to see all the rules. You're going to see how long the election lasts. And you're going to see all the pieces of legislation or the candidates within it. So everything that is created on BitCongress is going to be immediately viewable from a website. From just like Bitcoin, you can see transactions. You'll be able to go to the legislative viewer and you'll be able to see everything live. You'll be able to see every second a new law created, people amending laws. Every time someone amends a law, it creates a new election with the same rules, the same time. So if this election is going to end in an hour, this one is going to end the same, but someone just changed a word. So you'll see all these web of laws changing and being modified and hopefully ranking up with a consensus of the majority voting on some of them and seeing which ones are important to people.
Awesome, man. Well, we're going to start taking some calls here. If anybody wants to call in and talk to Morgan about BitCongress, the number to call in is 718-717-8296. And we're going to try to get to you guys in order. Now, we do have one caller already on the line from 619. How's it going?
Yeah.
What do you want to ask Morgan?
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
Pretty good.
What's going on?
So I think my main concern, I think it sounds like a very fantastic program
on smaller scales. But my question would be, for government's implementation, how would this be implemented? What's to stop the powers that be, which are banks, everyone knows this, from just putting a stop to it before it even begins?
Well, I mean, when I created any product for like Bitcoin, my first rule was to make it open source in case I got hit by a bus. The next day, it's still out there. And this concept, I'm going to put every piece of code out there that I make, and everyone's going to see how it works. And there's already competing ideas out there. What I'm just trying to do is as a business person, because I've been in business for a long time as a youthful person, and I'm trying to find the best way to make this not just a sellable concept with proper marketing and proper words, but also a package that is not necessarily competitive to a nation state that would be squashed by a nation state, but something that looks like it would be an upgrade to a nation state. It would be an upgrade to a company. It would be an upgrade to a local government or an upgrade to anything that needs to be voted on, because all the systems we use are the same, whether it's voting for the hot girl on Maxim magazine or Billboard Records or voting for president. It's all using centralized voting systems. And my hope with this is to pretty much put a calculator on the internet that allows anyone to vote for anything, and everyone will see the results. And whether that has to do with a large scale government system like we have here in the United States, what I've proposed is using something like the board account, which is something that I found along my searches over the last year. And the board account is a single winner election method in which voters rank options or candidates in order of preference. And it determines the outcome of the debate or the winner of an election by giving each candidate and each ballot a number of points corresponding with the number of candidates ranked lower. So if you want this person to win, you give them a one. If you want this person to win, if that first person doesn't win, at least in the second term, you want him to be the second person, your choice, you give him 2 points, and so on. And so that system put in a wide blockchain, like millions of people using this thing at once with many transactions per second. The board account is used for decision making for elections, especially when proportional representation is important. The quota border system is used, and the quota border system, it ranks lists of candidates in the preference, and it's pretty much an electoral system that a machine can understand. And what I want to do is put that on a blockchain so us human beings can see the machine doing the electoral count instead of 500 people we never see doing the electoral count, getting paid off or not paid off. I would honestly rather see a decentralized collection of computers like an internet being the electoral while we can watch it. It's not smart. It's not artificial intelligence. It's just a machine counting calculations. And if we see the machine count in a way that's detrimental to society, we can reset it because it's a machine. But as for the 500 or so electoral people, we don't know who they are daily. They change, and we can't buy them off or pay them off or even call them and ask them not to get paid off. So my hope is, you know, Congress is a collection of people. It also means to come together, man and woman. I would hope a Congress now can also mean a collection of nodes, a decentralized way of us talking to each other, just like Bitcoin shares transactions across the board so everyone has a copy of the record. I want everyone to have a copy of every law on their phone. And that was my ultimate goal before I even knew what Bitcoin was. I wanted to make this system that would allow me to say where my taxes go on my phone, say who I vote for, and pretty much you don't know who I am because I could log out and then you don't know who I am anymore. I wanted that system, but I didn't know what Bitcoin was. And now that we have Bitcoin, we can pay for taxes and we could pay things in our own decision, push it to a certain project or piece of legislation or candidate, and they can't pull it from us anymore. And now we'll be able to create numerous amounts of tokens and have them registered on a blockchain so we can make votes and we can make stamps. And we could send messages to each other using a token called Stamps, and it will record every message on the blockchain. So it'll be public messages, and it'll be recorded, and it'll be proven that this person said this message. So we can have that installed if we want to have identity, who's saying what and voting what, and we can have a full anonymous your Bitcoin address is all you need, and you can make as many of those as you want.
So we're coming to the end of the show here, Morgan. Thanks for enlightening us with this idea. Thanks for the caller from 619. I think the way I see this thing rising is by critical mass being adopted first, maybe at colleges and companies, and then growing.
Yo, here we go, through the stereo.